محمد حسینیت
زندہ
باد، حسینیت
زندہ باد،
یزیدیت
مردہ باد،
نعرہ حیدری
یا علی.
حسبنا اللہ نعم الوکیل نعم المولا و نعم النصیر. اعوذ باللہ من الشیطان اللعین الرجیم. بسم اللہ الرحمن الرحیم. الحمد للہ رب العالمین والصلاۃ والسلام علی اشرف الانبیاء والمرسلین سیدنا و مولانا ابی القاسم محمد
صلی اللہ
و علی آلہ الطیبین الطاہرین المعصومین. The important thing is how much capacity we have to take the knowledge that is given, not the amount of time that I can speak. And obviously, you know, whenever we learn something, it's very important. It's not how much you learn that is important. It's how you learn what you learn that's important. Right? A person can learn a lot of information, but if he doesn't process it, if he doesn't make it a part of his life, that knowledge not only is useless, it is harmful for him. Knowledge is only useful when it becomes light within you. It says, Al-ilmu nurun yaghdifuhu Allahu fi qalbi man yasha. Knowledge is a light that Allah puts in the hearts of whom He wishes. So knowledge is a light that is given, and hence it should become light. If it is just information, then it becomes harmful for us. It becomes a veil for us. A lot of times we see people who learn too much, too fast, and never get the chance to make that ilm a part of their life. Now that knowledge is a burden that they have to bear. And they end up on the Day of Judgment being answerable for the knowledge that they had, which they never practiced. And that knowledge will now complain that you bore me. And Allah gives the example of a certain group of people in the Quran. And He says that they used to, the books and the knowledge that they had was like a burden on a donkey. You put the burden on the donkey, and this certain group of people, which have been mentioned in Surah Jummah, when we look at them, we see Allah mentions them and tells about them. He says that these people, humilat tawrata, they carried the burden of the Torah like how donkeys carry their weight. And so when a donkey, whatever you put on the donkey, you see it's not useful for him, it's just a burden on him. And for us, the idea of knowledge that we have and the idea of ilm that we are gaining is something that we need to put in practice so that we can become like someone that the Ahlul Bayt can proudly say that these are our Shias. Because in the saying of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, he said that to his Shias, he says, Kunu lana zainan, that be an ornament for us. Wala takunu lana shaynan, and do not be a source of embarrassment for us. Because you, being our Shias, people will look at us through you. When you say that we represent Ahlul Bayt, that we are the Shia of Ahlul Bayt, so they don't know who Ahlul Bayt are, and whether you like it or not, you represent Ahlul Bayt. Whether you like it or not, you represent Ahlul Bayt, and there's no way you're going to get out of it. The only way you can get out of it is if you give up and say, let me join the majority. Right? Which you will not do that. Right? Because you know there's nothing there but darkness. If there is light, it is in the house of Ahlul Bayt. It is at the door of Ahlul Bayt. And when we are at their door to gain knowledge, then Ahlul Bayt also only give that much knowledge that we can bear. Otherwise, the knowledge that they had, and Imam Ali said this, Suluni Suluni Qablan Tafkuduni, ask me before you lose me. He says, I have the knowledge of the heavens and the earth in my heart. And I know the ways of the heavens more than I know the ways of the world. So ask me about here, ask me about there. But no one was there to take it. How can he give to people who are unable to carry it? That's what he told his companion when he went outside. He used to take one of his companion called Kumail. And he would go to a well. And he would go there and he would let out his frustrations and vent out the zulm that he was in. And you know what type of zulm he was in? The hardest thing for Imam Ali in the time that he was not the wars that were put on him or the people creating fitna or any of these things. The worst zulm and the worst oppression that Imam Ali faced was the fact that when he used to speak, he had no one who could understand what he was saying. Really, he didn't have anyone to understand. He used to go to a well and speak in a well. Because there's no one who would understand his words. Imagine that. You have someone who has so much knowledge and you have no one to take this from him. How he missed you. How much he missed you all. When he said that if these people who had ma'rifat were there, then that knowledge which he had, there would be someone who can carry it. So our goal is to become the carrier of this knowledge and to use this knowledge and to become what that knowledge requires us to become. And hence we ask Allah that, Allah, this knowledge that we are gaining, make this a source of light for us and make it such that Ahlul Bayt and our Imam can be proud of us. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. There are things in this life that we have that are called muqaddarat. Muqaddarat are things that Allah decides for us. Things that Allah has decided for us. Things that we don't control. And we see it all over our lives. They control our lives. Everything that you see is that is dictating your life that you have no control over, no choice in. And because it happens every day, and because this is an everyday issue, and it's so commonplace, we do not pay attention to it. We ignore it. We don't pay attention to it. We just let it go because we think it's an accident that's happening. We think that it is a coincidence that this happened with me. But the fact is, it is not a coincidence, it is a reality. These muqaddarat are there. Yes, there are certain places within those muqaddarat, within the things Allah decides for us, there are certain places and times that Allah lets you make a choice also. He also lets you make a choice. And those are the places where we have ikhtiyar. We have free will in those places only that are in between the muqaddarat of Allah. And that too, our free will and choice that we have is not such that we can do whatever we want. That too must be according to the muqaddarat of Allah. These are things that we had explained so far. And I want us to understand that before I go on. Because these muqaddarat that are there and looking at these muqaddarat really is what builds our iman, builds our relationship with Allah. When we look at reality, this is what builds us and builds our relationship with our imam. people who were with Imam Hussein in Karbala were people who focused on reality. They were, in other words, people who don't focus on reality are people who are living in a bubble, who are living in a dream world, who are living in this world that they made up for themselves. Those who live like that can never be with our Imam when he is raising the flag of Islam, because in their bubble they will never be able to understand the stand that he took. Many people who did not come with Imam Hussein, you see, many of them did not come with Imam Hussein because they were living in that bubble, in a dream world that they were, didn't know where they were going. And they just had certain ideas about their life, and they were living according to the ideas that they had. They could not see reality. Because they couldn't see reality, because they could not focus on reality, that's the reason you see that these people, when Imam Hussein told them, I'm leaving, I'm going, they knew what he was doing, they knew where he was going, but they all made excuses not to go with him. One or the other made an excuses, and they came up with very delicate, intricate, subtle excuses that even when you look at them, sometimes even sound religious. Sometimes even sound religious. People who come to him and says, you know that, listen, you're going there, you're going to get yourself killed. Why do you want to do this for? At least don't take your children along with you. That, and all of these things, they're advising him. It's not that they were against him. It's not that they're his enemies, they're still his Shias. They still believe in him, they still loved him, but because they lived in a dream world, because they lived in a bubble and could not see reality, that's why they could not stand with him. They could not come to Karbala with him. This, my friends, is the ending of people who live in a bubble and could not see reality. In our times and in our days, really, growth and the relationship between us and Imam Zamana, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif, this really comes from looking at reality, being a realistic person, seeing the ground reality. When person starts to see the ground reality, then you will see that he will build his relationship. He will have those bases to build a relationship with our Imam. But if he doesn't have those bases, if he doesn't look at reality, then he's living in a dream world. He can say Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajak as much as he wants. But if you're living in a bubble, if you're living in a dream world, you will never know when the Imam will come. In fact, you either will get lost before he comes or you will get lost after he comes. There are two people, there are two groups of Shias who will be lost in the time of the Imam, and the Imam will come back. One are those people who make haste in trying to jump to conclusions. You know, people who, you know, get so frustrated because the Imam's not coming, that they will be ready to tag along with any fake Imam who rises up and says, I'm the Imam. And they will rise with him, right? Why? Because of the frustration that they have. Because they couldn't wait. They were hasty. They didn't have the sabr. So what they'll do is that they'll join any false Imam that they have, any false movement that happens, and they'll jump on the bandwagon and go. And by the time they realize they're wrong, you end up like Waco, right? That's what happens. You join a bandwagon and you end up in flames. And then there are those people who are so cautious that even when the Imam will come, they'll say, you know, you just can't trust anyone these days. And the Imam will be calling them and they'll be like, you know what? The world nowadays is so unreliable, you know? You can never trust it. And what happened is that, well, even when the Imam will come, they will not join him. They will doubt him. And hopefully they will not fight him. Right? Hopefully they will not fight him. Maybe inshallah they will be under his hukumat. But the fact is, the relationship of the Imam in today's world is not built by Iman. People think by learning ideology, by learning aqa'id, that we will get close to our Imam. I mean, what's your idea of getting close to Allah or the Imam? Right? You say that, you know, we need to have 50 lessons of Aqaid on Usuluddin. You can have 50 lessons of Aqaid on Usuluddin, but it's not going to help you come closer to the Imam. You know, what's going to bring you closer to the Imam and build this relationship with him is if you start looking at reality and living in reality. Looking at those things that bind us, those destinies, those muqaddarat of Allah, the things that Allah has decided for you, by focusing on them, you become a real person. And that reality will make you see the need that you have for your Imam. Because when you live in a bubble, you don't feel the need for an Imam. You're living in a bubble. For example, I'll give an example before I go on so that you understand this very clearly. Send a salawat, please. Let's move forward, everyone, and let's pack up, inshallah. We have some room in the front. Send. My friends, if a person wants change in his life, if he wants to change something, any change he wants to bring around, then the change can only come when he recognizes and acknowledges the need for that change. You know, I want to change something. I want to change my lifestyle or a habit. But if I don't recognize I have a problem, if I don't recognize the need for the change, then why would I want the change? If I'm happy with my situation, if I'm satisfied with my life, then why would I want to change my life? Really? I gain to benefit by living like this. If I live like this, I get everything. I'm getting everything. Really? You know, we have a job, we have education, we have the freedom to do majalis here, right? We have, the Bill of Rights, so-called, right? We have, whatever you say, you know, we have all these rights, right? And freedoms, right? And now we even have Obamacare. So if you didn't have medical care, there you go. You have that also. So now tell me, if I'm satisfied with this life, if I'm happy with the way things are, why would I want to change for? Why do I want to change for? If I'm thinking that, hey, listen, where I am right now, I feel at peace and I'm secure and I have no problems at all. I'd rather be here than any place else. Then you know what? Why would I want to change? If I feel that, you know what, my kids can go to school and they can do whatever they want and they can say whatever they want, we have those freedoms here to live, then why do I want to change my situation? Tell me. If I'm not unhappy, if I'm not satisfied, then I want to change. If I'm happy with my job, why would I want to change for? My friends, the first condition for change is to be unhappy, not satisfied with the situation you're in. If you are happy with your situation, you don't want change. And if you don't want change, why do you want the Imam to come back? Why do you want the Imam to come back? What is your relationship with the Imam? Why is the Imam coming back for Imam? Why do you listen, Imam? Everything's fine here, you know. When we get problems, then I'll call you. Right? I mean, this is the attitude we'll have. So to us, to a person like that, Ajallallahu ta'ala farajak is just a formality that he does after prayers. It's just a formality. It's not a need inside of himself that he's expressing. You see, if it's not a need, then you know what? He doesn't want this to happen because the Imam is going to come and change everything. Why would I want that for? You see, why? Because he's living in a bubble. He thinks he has no need. Tell me, my friends, Is the need of an imam circumstantial or is it a real need? Meaning, you know, for example, is the imam, like, for example, the cops, the only time you call 911 is when you're in an emergency? So we tell the imam that the emergency hasn't come to Los Angeles yet. You know, when we will have an emergency, then we'll call you. Right? Is that the situation? You see, if a person is living in this bubble, there's no way that he wants the imam to come back. Or he has no relationship with the imam. It's just a formality that we are going through in life. But if a person becomes a realist and understands the reality on the ground, what is going on in this world? And if someone tells him, bro, it's not like how you're thinking it is. Really, is this the freedom that we want? You know what kind of freedom you have? You know, you have, I mean, the same freedom that a bird has in a cage. Right, you tell the bird, this is your cage and you're free to fly around in it. And you're like, you see, we have freedom here. We can fly around in the cage. What kind of freedom is that? Is that real freedom? Is that human freedom? No, it's not human freedom. That's the freedom that you have. This is a cage we built for you and you can fly around as much as you want. And we are happy that we have the freedom to fly around in this cage. And then if someone, he comes to you and says, wait a minute, why do you, this is not real freedom. There's a whole world outside of this cage. There's a whole world outside of this limitation and restriction. There's a whole real freedom that you actually have, that you need to fight for, that you need to stand up for, that you are a human being who has been made for greater things than this. And you're like, really? But I'm happy here. Look at the cage. I get my food. I get my drink. And sometimes the master also comes and tickles me. And sometimes we have to see, is this real freedom? A person like this who lives in this bubble really cannot see reality. When he cannot see reality, he doesn't see the muqaddarat of Allah, he doesn't see the destiny of Allah and the things that Allah is doing, then you know what? His relationship with Allah or the Imam will be an artificial relationship. It will only become real when we recognize that I am in need of Allah. He is a need of mine, and this need is real. Imam is a real need of mine. Without him, I am empty. Without him, there is something missing in me. When a person starts seeing that reality, that's when his relationship with the Imam will also become a real relationship. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Now, these muqaddarat that we have, these things that Allah has destined for us, the question is, can we change these muqaddarat? Meaning things that Allah decided for us. How do these muqaddarat change? First of all, the answer is, yes, you can change. Right? And I'll give you certain ways that which you can change them. But the main and the more fundamental question is this. What is it that determines these muqaddarat? What is the standard, the mayyar, the mizan, on which these muqaddarat are decided by Allah in the first place? Who's going to get how much? How does Allah decide this? Is there a method or is it some like arbitrary decisions Allah makes, random, you know, okay, you know what? I feel like he should get hair and he should be bald. There. You know, and everyone's like, but Allah, what did I do? Deserve this. You know, really it happens, right? I wanted to be 6'5", I ended up at 5'5". What's that? I wanted to be a little bit taller, you know? I says, no, that's your height. He decided for us. We can't choose otherwise. No matter how much we hang on monkey bars, it will still be 5'5". right? We'll still be that. You won't be growing taller, really. Yeah, you know, nowadays there are certain operations, this and that, you know, you can do and add a few inches here and there, but you know, really want to go through that? Imagine this, my friends. Allah decided for us. Now, on what basis does He decide these things? On what basis does He decide what we get? You see, this is what we need to understand. Because if we understand why we are getting what we are getting, it will really help us to live with it better. Really, it'll help us to live with it. In fact, it'll help us to enjoy what we have. What are you getting? Why are you getting this? And this is what we want to discuss about today. And I want to make sure that we understand this really well. Because there are certain things that change our muqaddarat, that determine our muqaddarat. There's a small list, I will go through that. So that you understand the minor reasons. And at the end, I will mention the major reason. All right? Say the salawats. The first thing that determines your muqaddarat, whether you are going to get it hard or easy, is the capacity of your thinking. Yes. Those who have stronger thought process and think better will get something different than those who think less. For example, you will see someone who has more aql or is using more aql will have a different takdir than a person who has less aql. Now you might be thinking the other way around. Whatever you're thinking, think in the opposite direction right now. Whatever you thought of what I just said, think in the opposite direction. The opposite direction is what? And that is the real direction. That someone whose thinking is stronger, you see that Allah will make it harder on him. He will make it more difficult on him. He will put more burden on him. Someone whose thinking is less and the capacity of thinking is less, you will see that Allah will make it easy on him. Allah will make it easy on him, and He does. He does make it easy on him. Now, which group of human beings, you know, don't have a mature mind? Who don't have aql? They have, but they haven't started using it yet. Which group of human beings that you can classify as, says, okay, you know what, these is a group of human beings that, you know, are immature, they don't have the capacity of thinking, or they don't have a mature mind? Kids, very good. Children. Now, children, their capacity of thinking is less than adults, and hence, what happens? Tell me, is their life easy or hard? You see, look at children's life. What is the most major issue of their day? What game I'm going to play after I come back from school? I mean, that is their greatest dilemma for the day, you know? And they're wondering, my goodness, where am I going to go, you know? Really, if that's the greatest dilemma they have, then you know what? You call it a hard life? You know, it's easy for them. It's easy. Others are taking care of them because their capacity of thinking is not high. That's why others take care of them. There are people who are appointed over them so that they can look after them. Allah makes it easy on them. He doesn't give them the burden of making decisions that will affect their lives or the lives of others. He makes it easy for them. And even adults, for example, even adults who, you know, don't have the capacity of thinking, they're not developed, what happens? What happens with them? They also are looked after by others. They also are looked after by others. Even the Sharia doesn't give responsibility to them. Even the Islamic law says, alright, you know what, you don't need to do these obligations. You don't need to do these things. Makes it easy on them, right? But those who have aql, then you see, then they're decree and their destiny becomes harder. Now they have responsibility. Now they have problems. You know, the minute you had akal, what did you do? Right? The minute you started to think, you went and got an expensive education. Now you have to pay for it. And then you got a wife. Now you have to pay for that. Or the wife had the husband and she has to pay for it. Either way. The minute you started thinking, now you got yourself into problems. Troubles and burdens. Well worth it, but the issue is that it is a burden. And it becomes harder. And the better is your thinking, the harder will be the decree that you will get. One of the things that determine what you get, ease or hardship, in life is your capacity of thinking. That is the first thing that determines your muqaddarat. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The second thing that influences what you get from Allah and what Allah decides for you is your attachments. Yes. Your connections, meaning who you connected to, who are you related to. That has a lot to do with what you get and what you don't get, or how hard it is for you, or how easy it is for you. If someone, as an example, if someone is attached to Ahlul Bayt, if you become the Shia of Ahlul Bayt, then because of that relationship, Allah will make your life more difficult. Yes. He will make your life more difficult. Someone came to Imam Jafar as-Sadiq alayhi salam. And he told him that, I want to become your Shia. I want to become your Shia. So the Imam said, alright, then get ready to face problems. Get ready to face problems. Because your connection with us, your relationship with us, will require you to go through troubles. Simple as that. And then you look at it. If you become the Shia of Ahlul Bayt, your life cannot be easy. It is difficult. Whether you like it or not. And if the enemies don't make it difficult, then Allah will do something to make it difficult. Don't think it's the enemies that are doing, you know, for example, oh, the Wahhabis and these Takfiris, they're out there to kill us and this and that. Yeah, that's there. But if they go, Allah will do something else to make you in trouble. He will never let you have it easy. Keep your ideas like that, my friends. He will never make it easy for you. If you want to be a Shia, there is nothing that is going to make it easy for you. Your life is going to be in trouble because you are connected to Ahlul Bayt. You say you're the Shia of Ahlul Bayt. That naturally is going to bring problems to you in your life. You can make as many du'as as you want and say, Allah, you know, please, we don't need bala and this and that. But the fact is that these du'as will not have an effect. If you're related to Ahlul Bayt, your life is in trouble. You are going to face problems in this life. And, obviously, you know, there is a way to get out of it. Right? There's a way to make your life easier. And you know this. You know, the way to, if you don't want problems that come by being a Shia of Ahlul Bayt, that's very easy. Quit. Grow your beard longer and your pants shorter. And there, your life will become easy. Right? Shias don't target anyone. Right? Right. We don't go after long beards or short pants. No, we're fine with long beards and short pants. It's they who have a problem with us, right? They're the ones who have a problem with us. We are the ones being targeted. The idea is that, really, you want to make your life easy? That's how you do it. And that's why when a person wants to become the Shia, Imam said, then get ready to face problems in your life. That's what's going to happen. It is like that. So the second thing that determines how hard you get it from Allah, how difficult He makes it for you, is if you choose to become a Shia of Ahlul Bayt. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Your actions and deeds, the third thing, can also have an effect on your muqaddarat, on your destiny, on things that Allah decides for you. We have hadith that says, where the Prophet tells Ali and says, Ya Ali, sadaqato yaruddul qada. That when you give sadaqah and charity, it diverts the qadr of Allah. It diverts the destiny of Allah. You know, and that's what we do whenever we, for example, go and travel, you know, to any place where we go on a journey or somewhere, we give sadaqah. Sadaqah being, for example, it is said that when you give charity, one, it diverts bala and troubles and sufferings, destiny, it diverts it, right? Two, when you give sadaqah, that whenever you make the intention to give sadaqah, that dollar, that whatever you give, until that, you know, dollar does not reach the intended target, the intended person who will receive it, then Allah takes zamanat, He takes guarantee of that dollar. You see that? And this is the reason. You see that this dollar that I took out and said I want to give this to the charity, then Allah says that I will take zamanat and guarantee that that dollar that you took out is going to reach where it's supposed to reach. Meaning, for example, I said I want to make it reach, for example, someone in, let's say, Sham. It will reach there. That's the reason why, because of that, and because of this reasoning, people wear that on their hands as Imam Zamin, because they know that as long as that sadaqah doesn't reach its intended target, Allah is protecting it. And whoever is holding it. And that's why you have it on you. So that when you go there, you see that this is your protection. And that's how they made it up. So that a person who's traveling can be protected by taking out that sadaqah. Sadaqah, if you give, it protects you. It is something that will make you divert the destiny that is coming towards you. No matter what type it is. Right? It is going to be diverted. So one of the things that you can do is actions and deeds. These are things that can change. The fourth thing, my friends, that changes your destiny, that changes the muqaddarat of Allah or determines it, is your niyat. Yes. When you make niyat to do something, it changes a lot of the muqaddarat. For example, the hadith that says that when a mu'min, when a believer intends to do sin, now you know that when you intend to do sin, you don't get the punishment of the sin. Right? You only are punished when you do the sin. So I can intend as many wrongs as I want. I can intend to do as many wrong things as I want to do, but as long as I don't do them, I'm not punished. I'm not going to be punished by Allah. Allah is not going to get a hold of me and say, oh, you did this. But there are certain effects that do happen when you make the intention of doing wrong. One of the things that happens, that whenever you intend to do wrong, even though you're not punished, but one of the things that happens is that Allah makes rizq haram on you. He will make your rizq constrained. Restrict your rizq. Whenever you intend to do sin, you know, sometimes I want to listen to music. The rizq that is ordained for you is now restricted. Right? It's like, for example, you know, you lost a hefty amount from your bank balance. And you're wondering, where'd the money go? That's how it happens. Anytime you intend to do things. So your niyat affects your muqaddarat. Your niyat also affects the muqaddarat. Now, the fifth thing that affects your muqaddarat is the love that Allah and Ahlul Bayt have for you. Yes. When I explain about your love for Ahlul Bayt, that also has an effect on your muqaddarat. But when Allah and Ahlul Bayt love you, that also has an effect on your muqaddarat. You know? Maybe you don't, you know, I mean, a lot of times we don't love Ahlul Bayt as much as we should. And we all realize that. You know, and we all want to do more. But let me tell you this, right? You might not love the Imam as much as you want, but I'll tell you this, the Imam loves you to no extent. Ahlul Bayt love you to no extent. I mean, all the way, they love you. And when they love you, this affects your muqaddarat. You know what it does? It makes your life more difficult. Really. It makes your life more difficult. When in their diaries, they write down your name. Yes, in their diaries. Whether you write your name down in your diary, if the name of Imam Hussein is not in your diary, or Imam Zaman is not in your diary, it doesn't matter. But in their diary, they have written down your name. They have written down your name. Whether you like it or not, they have written it down. And what that does is that it makes your life more difficult. Let me give you an example. You know, if a mafia king is caught, right? A mafia boss, he is caught. And he says that in the list of my friends is this Ali Khan. What will happen to you? As soon as you know it, the authorities are at your door. This guy says he knows you. Right? This guy says he knows you. The fact that he has your name in his books is going to put you in trouble. That's the same way if Ahlul Bayt love you, then your life is in trouble. Really, that's the way it is. Allah will make it hard on you. Because that's what happens when you love someone. You see, my friends, understand this, how this is working. You see, you don't make life of people you don't love hard. You take it easy on them. Tell me, how many times you got upset at the neighbor's kid for not doing their homework? Tell me. Hey, you neighbor kid, you didn't do your homework. Get back in there and do your homework. You don't care if he does it or not. But if your son doesn't do it, if your kid doesn't do it, then you get upset at him. And then your kid is saying, why don't you treat me like the neighbors? Because I love you, that's why. I care for you, that's why. My friends, when Allah cares for you and He loves you, then He's going to make it difficult on you. That's the natural consequence of His love for you. Yes. This is, my friends, all of the things I listed out that affect your muqaddarat. Now, all of these things I mentioned are, yes, there, and they do determine your muqaddarat. But there's one reason above all, there's one factor above all that in determining your muqaddarat is number one. And this reason is the most important reason. And this reason is so important that if any of these factors come in the way, then those factors don't count. Whether the love of Allah, whether you being a Shia, whether you're making du'as, nothing counts when this factor is in play. There's one factor, and that's what I want us to understand right now. one factor that is so important, so influential in deciding what you get and what you don't get, that this factor is the overall reason. All other reasons are secondary. This is primary. And that is what we want to know. This is big. Yes. You know, it is big and also requires a big price. Okay, so give me the price. Now, as for a price, I got a bonus. Alhamdulillah. That's good. Very well. So, let's go at it, my friends. The most important reason why muqaddarat are decided. The most important reason. And this is something I want you all to really understand, because this is crucial in your and mine's life. It has so much to do with our life that if we can just comprehend it, if we can just understand it, and hopefully I will explain it more later, but if you can just try to reflect on it, it will change how we look at things in life. The number one reason why our muqaddarat are decided, why Allah decides things for us, is our testing. Yes, it's called azmayesh, imtihan, ibtila. You see, my friends, we have come to the world, we have come to this world for testing. Yes. We came here to be tested, to be tried. That's why we have come here. We are in an exam room and giving an exam. That's what we are doing here. And everything we get is because of that test. Because of that exam that is being given right now. And nothing, all this exam paper that is being given, nothing can change that exam paper. No dua can change that exam paper. No tawassul can change that exam paper. No wasila can change the exam paper. What we get from Allah's muqaddar according to our exam is according to our exam. That which is according to our exam, that cannot change. The things that can change are things that do not have to do with our exam. Those things you can make dua for and Allah will change it. If you can just understand that, then you will understand why duas are not answered here. Why are duas not answered? It's not according to your test. What you are getting is according to your test, and that's it. That's what we're here for. And when that is decided, no matter if you go to any place and make dua there, you can make dua in the haram of Imam Hussein under his dome, if that dua goes against your testing, it will not change. That dua cannot be answered. Yes. Now let me read a hadith for you, and from here, understand what I'm saying. This hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Now he says, "Law da'a laka Israfil." If Israfil made dua for you, you know who Israfil is? His angel. The trumpet guy. Yes. That's right. The one who blows the trumpet. That's right. Law da'a laka Israfil. If Israfil prays for you, wa Jibra'il, and Jibra'il prays for you, wa Mikail, and if Mikail prays for you, wa Hamalat al Arsh, and if those angels that are holding up the arsh of Allah, if they pray for you, wa ana fihim, and I pray for you also. Meaning, who's praying together? if Israfil, Jibrail, Mikael, those angels holding up the throne of Allah, and Rasulullah is amongst them making dua. He's saying, if we all pray for you and make dua for you, ma tazawwajta illa imra'atan lati kutibat laka, you will not marry anyone except for the wife Allah has written for you. Yes. If you come to me and ask me that, Ya Rasulullah, give me a good spouse, give me an obedient wife, give me this, give me that, I can make as much dua as I want, but the only person you will marry is the one that Allah has written for you for your testing. Because that is a test for you. That which Allah is giving to you is your means to Jannah, is your means to greatness. That which Allah is giving to you. A lot of times we think that, you know, the best wife is the one who is the most obedient. No, maybe the best wife is the one who makes us obedient. Yes, that is most times the case, right? You don't need a wife who listens to you. You need a wife that you listen to. You see, maybe that is your testing. Maybe that is what is right for you. The only one who will decide that is Allah, and no one else can be in that play. No one else can take a part. This is muqaddar for you. This has been written for you. Now you go through that test. You see, now you go through that test. This is Allah's muqaddar. Allah has written for Rasulullah is saying, I don't have a part in that. I can make as much dua as I want. The only one you will marry is the one Allah has written for you. That the one Allah has written for you, that's it. And when you leave that, then you're leaving the exam room. You're leaving the exam room. Really, Allah decided, you know what, the best for you is this. This is what's going to make you reach the highest place for you. This is best for you. So now, a lot of times what happens, like one person, he came to me after a speech I said somewhere. He said, you know, Maulana, you know, I really need to understand what you're saying. He said, what? You know, I know this woman and she divorced her husband. And then she got married again, and she divorced that one, second one. Then she got married again the third time, she divorced the third one. And she got married the fourth time, and now she's happy. And I'm like looking at him. He said, how do you explain that? I said, bro, what do you mean happy? What do you mean happy? Happy for how long? For 20, 30 years? For that happiness, she has sacrificed the chance for an eternal time of happiness. This was a test Allah gave her. If she had gone through that hardship for a few years here, then that eternity could be blissful for her. But she walked away from it. She did that. I don't want that eternal happiness. I want the few years of happiness here. Just a few years of happiness here. I'm happy with this. What's that happiness? And that too, they're not happy. You will see that. No one is really happy in marriage. It can't be. There are restrictions, problems, diversity, so many things that come about. Yes, there's happiness where it comes. But there's sadness, there's grief that comes all together. Imam Ali said, nothing is constantly happy in this world. You cannot find constant happiness here. It's an impossibility. Running after it is a vain effort. It's a vain effort to run after such things. That's why he says that, listen, when Allah desires something for a test, that's what we are here for. I'll explain more, inshallah, tomorrow. But just understand it this much, my friends. We are here to be tested. You are going through a test right now. And the sooner we come to that realization, it's better for us. You know what the problem is with people? They think, really, this is how they live their lives. If you look at how people live their lives, it's like this. They think that Jannat is under construction, and in the meanwhile, Allah didn't have a place to put people, so He said, here, why don't you have a vacation in this world? And when the construction is done, you all can come back there. This is how we live our lives. Really. This is how we think our lives are. I mean, we are here on a vacation. We live our lives. I mean, we are actually in a test. We have no clue that we are in a test and we are living like, you know, happy-go-lucky lives. The sooner we realize that we are being tested and everything that we are getting is according to our test, according to our exam, the better it is for us, then we will understand so many things in regards to that. This is the primary reason why muqaddarat are decided. What determines Allah's muqaddar, that's taqdeer, is this, testing. This is for His test. And it's going to come there. And that cannot change. Yes, my friends, that cannot change. Yes, you can make dua. But that dua will be answered if it's according to your test. If it's not according to your test, that dua will not be answered. It will not be answered. No matter who makes that dua. So my friends, whenever your dua is answered, know that that answer of the dua is according to the test that you are giving. Is according to the azmaish and the imtihan that you are giving. That ibtila that you are giving. It's according to that. Subhanallah. La ilaha illallah. You know, we make duas, and it's good to make duas. Now people will say that, well, why should we make duas knowing that Allah will only answer it that this? No, just the action of making dua is good. Just making the dua is good. There's, I mean, just the fact that you do it, you understand who the Malik and the owner is, the master is. Because you ask Him. Just that is good. But the answer to that, know that that answer will not come to you unless it is according to Allah's plans for your testing. And that's why when it does come, then know that what you have been given is a test for you. And sometimes when you ask for something and it does come, and it's now a test for you, it really becomes hard on you to deal with it. And you now make it that test that you're giving even harder. Yes, you make it harder. Subhanallah. You know, there was a time, I'll give you an example for that. There was a time that when Rasulullah passed away. We see that Imam Hussein was just a toddler. And soon after, Imam Hussein's mother passed away. He was in hardship. Right? It was difficult for him. Then, after some time, Imam Ali left Imam Hussein. And again, it was a mountain of devastation for Imam Hussein. You see, I want you to understand it from Imam Hussein's angle, not our angle. Our love for someone, even our relatives, you know, alhamdulillah, we do love them, but still, it begs for more. But Imam Hussein, when he loved his parents, you know, it was not like our love for our parents. It is an extreme love. It is that type of love that if we have a fraction of it, when we lose our beloved, it's like when we go crazy. When you see certain people go crazy, they have so much love, they're in a state of shock. Because they have so much attached to it. Imam Hussein's attachment and his love for Ali and Fatima, his love for Rasulullah, his love for Imam Hussein was so much that we cannot even begin to comprehend it. So then when he lost Rasulullah, it was difficult. It was difficult. Rasulullah knew this. Rasulullah knew this. When he was dying, when Rasulullah was dying, he asked for Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein came on his chest. He was lying on his chest and Rasulullah told him, you know, he was holding him. His last breath that Rasulullah was taking. Last breath. Imam Ali tried to take Imam Hussein away because the mustahabat of a dying person, someone who's in ihtidhar, in the time of ihtidhar, the time of death, there's certain things to be done. Allah says so, mustahabat that needs to be done. For example, they shouldn't be weighed on the chest, you know, you should open the buttons of the chest and these type of things. People who are in ihtidhar. So Imam Ali was picking up Imam Hussein in order to open up the buttons of Rasulullah. And Rasulullah, he told Ali, Ali, please leave Hussein on my chest. Please leave Hussein on my chest. And Imam Ali said, but Rasulullah, I just want to do the things that are necessary for ihtidhar to open your buttons. Then Rasulullah said, Ali, still leave Hussein on my chest. Imagine this. You know, Rasulullah, he knew how much Imam Hussein loved him. And Rasulullah in turn loved him back that way. He loved him back that way. And then after him, now you see Fatima passed away. Fatima became shaheed. And when Imam Hussein's mother became shaheed, and she became shaheeda and she was martyred, this was another mountain of devastation on the heart of Imam Hussein. His heart is very delicate, you know, his heart is very delicate. Again, he went through that sadness, but he lived through it with hardship. And then when Imam Ali passed away, you know that he was clinging to the legs of Imam Ali when he was in the Masjid of Kufa. And he was shedding so many tears that the feet of Imam Ali were being washed with his tears. When Imam Ali looked at him and said, Hussein, please don't cry like this in front of me, because how I see you and what will happen to you. I'm afraid of what will happen to you and what you have to go through, Hussein. I don't want to see you cry from now. But what can Hussein do? He's in love with Imam Ali. He loves his father so much. And then when Imam Hassan died, it was devastating for Imam Hussein. All of this was devastating for Imam Hussein, and you know what, after that there was nothing. I mean, all the people that Imam Hussein loved so much, all of the elders that he respected and loved and adored all through his life were taken away by Allah. And that peace that he used to have by just looking at them, it really, when he used to be with Imam Hassan, you wouldn't know, there wouldn't be a comparison to give you a comparison. But when he used to look at Imam Hassan, he would find so much peace in him that no matter what problem he is in, he would find tranquility and peace in that way. But when he lost Imam Hassan also, now there was no one that he could look up to, no one that he could see, no one that he could want to see. Now you see, with all that hardship, now Imam Hussein, knowing what he has to do and what Allah has in store for him, he has decreed for him a test that no one has given before, and Rasulullah prepared him for it, Fatima prepared him for it, Imam Ali prepared him for it, Imam Hassan prepared him for it. Now Hussein knows the test that he has to give, but that source of peace, that source of tranquility wasn't there. So that's why when he went to pray before Allah, and it was the night prayer, namaz the shab that he prayed, he made a dua to Allah that, Allah, give me a daughter that is going to bring peace to my heart. Give me a daughter that will bring that peace back to my heart, that when I look at her, I will find peace. When she lays on me, I will find peace, that I can find my tranquility. So now Allah gifted Imam Hussein a daughter. Imam Allah gifted him a daughter that he called, that was named Ruqayya, but she was called Sakina by Hussein, because Sakina means tranquility and peace. She brought peace to the heart of Imam Hussein. She brought peace to the heart of Imam Hussein. Now you see, when Imam Hussein asked for this dua and Sakina was given to Imam Hussein, but now the muqaddar of Allah is that Sakina will also be a part of that test. Sakina would also be a part and parcel of whatever Hussein will have to go through. Hussein, you know what you're asking for. You're asking for your daughter to become the muqaddar of Allah. Hussein knew this, and that's why it was hard for Hussein. That was, it was difficult for Hussein. But you see, Hussein went with that, and he took his daughter, and Sakina came to Karbala, and now that daughter Sakina, she became the symbol of Imam Hussein's movement after Karbala. After Karbala, if there was zulm and oppression done, if there's injustice done, then it's Sakina that became the symbol of that movement. Sakina became the symbol of that movement. But this Sakina was that girl, was that daughter of Imam Hussein, that Imam Hussein showered so much love on her, it was worth a whole lifetime of love. A whole lifetime of love that he showered on her. But that day when he made the final farewell to the family on Ashura, when he made the final farewell to the family on Ashura, and he got on his horse and he told Zuljanah, "One more time, Zuljanah, take me out to the battlefield. I won't burden you anymore, my old faithful steed. You just take me out once more and that's it. And you are free to go wherever you want to go." You're free to go wherever you want to go, Zuljanah. Zuljanah in his own way is saying that, "Master, I would ride to death for you. I would ride into a pit of fire for you. But what can I do? There are brakes on my leg that are not letting me move forward." When Imam Hussein looked down, he saw Sakina holding the legs of Zuljanah. She was holding the legs of Zuljanah. Imam Hussein looked at her. Now imagine this, Karbala, Ashura, everyone has died violently, and now Imam Hussein is riding towards his death, his final stand, and now Imam Hussein takes a look at this daughter that he had asked Allah for in Namaz-e-Shab. In what way did Imam Hussein look at her? Hussein is a father. He comes off the horse. He comes off the horse. He takes a look at Sakina. What can he tell her? What can he tell her? All he manages to say is that, "My Sakina, what is it that you want?" Sakina says, "Father, don't go to the battlefield. Don't go to the battlefield, because everyone who has gone today has died. They have died. And I'm afraid that you will go and you will die also." Hussein, all he could do, he could not say any words. All he could do is bring the head of Sakina to his chest. Sakina, you know, I find peace when your head is in my chest. He held Sakina, embraced her closely. Sakina laid her head on the chest of Hussein for a moment. For a moment she found that love, and she found that peace, and she found that care, that tenderness that defined her life so far. and she was so close to him. And then Hussein said that, Sakina, you know, Sakina, let me make a deal with you. Let me make a deal with you, Sakina. You know, until now you used to sleep on my chest, isn't that right? She said, yes. And your brother Asghar used to sleep on your mother's chest, isn't that right? He said, yes. Sakina, let's make a trade. From now on, you sleep on your mother's chest and let Asghar sleep on my chest. Hussein left Sakina. Hussein left Sakina, went to the battlefield. That was the last that Sakina saw of Imam Hussein alive. That was the last time she saw Imam Hussein alive. Yes, there were times when she saw him dead. There were times when she saw him dead. The first time was in Sham-e Ghareeba, when she came and she went looking for Hussein and she was lost. And Zainab and Umm Kulsum came out searching for Sakina. They came out frantically searching for Sakina because Hussein left her as an amanat. And in the midst of all the chaos, they had lost Sakina and their hearts were beating and they were moving so fast to look for Sakina and crying out, Sakina, where are you, Sakina? Call us, Sakina. When they went around looking, they went through different bodies. They saw different bodies that they went across, bodies that they recognized, of their dear ones, of their beloved fallen ones they recognized. But now they came to a body that was injured in such a way, that was harmed in such a way, that was trampled in such a way, that was disfigured in such a way that it was unrecognizable. And they saw Sakina clinging to that body and saying, Father, why did you leave me, Father? They came to Sakina and said, Sakina, we don't recognize this body. How did you recognize this body? She says, I did. When I was coming here, the body called me and asked me to come here. This is the first time Sakina saw Hussein after his shahadat. First time. And you know, the last time she saw him was in the prison of Sham. It was in the prison of Sham. After she was imprisoned there and went through the prison, that's the last time she saw. This was the time when she had the dream of Imam Hussein. And Hussein with his grandfather, with his mother and father, they all came. And he said, Sakina, come to me, Sakina. I've been waiting for you. Now it's time for you to come to me. When she woke up from that dream, she started screaming in a way that she would not stop. They tried to stop her, but she would not stop. The guards came, and Yazid even asked, what is the problem? What is this chaos in the prison? They said, it's the daughter of Sakina. She had a dream, and her father came to her. And so Yazid said, well, then give her father to her. So they brought the head of Imam Hussein on a platter, and they came into the room, into that prison cell, and they brought in her into that prison cell. And then they came, they brought that head in front of Sakina. Sakina just looked at that head, all the love that it meant for her, all the comfort that it brought to her. She just took that head, put it on her chest, and for one moment she just started to say something to her father, whispered something in his ears, and then became silent, would lie down and became silent, did not move. The ladies wondered what happened. They said, Sajjad, go and see what happened. Sajjad went there, and when he went close, he picked up Sakina, and all he could muster up was say, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un.
It's سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. يا محمود بحق محمد، يا علاء بحق علي، يا فاطر السماوات بحق فاطمة، يا محسن بحق حسن، يا قديم الأحسان بحق حسين. Allah, give us the tawfiq to be on the right path, wisdom to understand your guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us his helper when he comes. Wa akhir da'wan alhamdulillah rabbil alameen. Matam
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain. Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussain.
Ya Hussein.